Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:41 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is May 16th. I thought we'd kick off with 10-year Treasury yields. They were down a bit, but not a lot. And the trend is still in evidence. Although this pullback has pushed back down into the underlying range. And if we think about the size of that last range, the top of it was at about 2.98%, the bottom at 2.71. Split the difference, you're going to come out somewhere around the 2.80. So on an intraday basis, it got down to 2.80. So we're right in the region of a midpoint danger line stop. And depending on whether you placed it a little bit above the middle or a little bit below the middle, it would have been triggered at this stage. It was a beautifully consistent trend. It's a little less consistent now. If, on the other hand, yields start to pull back through 2.8%, well, then we're definitely not talking about a consistent trend anymore. It would be the biggest pullback we've seen since this big leap higher in yields over the course of the last 9 months. So we're at a critical juncture. And the point that I don't think I've been particularly lucid in calling it a chicken and egg scenario, but I think Zoltan Pozsar did a good job of it today and helped me to elucidate my own thoughts in that stock markets pull back. Therefore, the Federal Reserve thinks that their policies are working. If the market gets the idea into its head, or investors get the idea that the Fed thinks their policies are working, they'll start to price in the potential that there aren't going to be any more interest rate hikes in the market's rally, which of course means that the Federal Reserve will think that their policies aren't working, and then they'll be more inclined to raise rates. So it's obviously a secular, or excuse me, it's a secular, it's a circular argument. And this is, of course, one of the difficulties that we have with the market right now. So the Federal Reserve definitely wants to combat inflation. They want to try and tighten up financial conditions, but they don't want to crash the market. And they certainly don't want to crash the housing market. But at the same time, they definitely are worried about inflation. And obviously, there are going to have to be trade-offs. If they really do want to get in control of inflation, well, then they're definitely going to have to tackle the incredible jump in demand that we've had in the economy as a result of the measures put in place to combat the pandemic. Bond yields becoming less consistent on the upside tend to suggest that investors are beginning to price in the potential there's going to be deflation in future. And that might well be as a result of the Federal Reserve tightening too much. Now, of course, there is always a wrinkle in the narrative, and that's definitely oil. Oil prices are now right in the region of the sequence of lower rally highs, and on an intraday basis, tested the high from back in April. Upside follow-through tomorrow would conclude this period of consolidation and begin a new upleg. But we're already very close to the all-time peak. So when we start to think about the prospect of inflation getting back under control, well, oil prices doing and pushing on to new all-time highs certainly wouldn't help. Now, when we think then about what's next, well, you would need to have a global significant deterioration in growth to really hit demand for oil. But the biggest challenge is that investors are looking for a way to hedge themselves against the deterioration that we're seeing in cryptocurrencies and then also the risk of additional volatility in the stock market, and they're looking at commodities as a potential bastion. I think that when we look at what BP is doing, well, the share is starting to rebound from the region of, sorry, this is US dollar terms. It has done better than that in pounds. When we look at this chart, it is bouncing from the upper side of the underlying range, and it is back above the 1,000-day moving average. And it's likely the 200-day moving average is going to cross back up above that 1,000-day moving average in the not so distant future. The company is investing a ton of money in Australia. So this is going to be something in the order of $16 billion and or excuse me, $36 billion for hydrogen. So this is a major oil company investing tens of billions of dollars in a project that does not produce oil. So we would then have to question, where is the supply response going to come from? Eventually, oil companies are going to have to start deploying some of that excess cash into actually producing oil, or prices are not going to come back down. And it's started to become a political liability. So I think it's at some stage we're going to have to see some political will to absolve some of the major oil companies from the sin of investing in new oil production. When we look at a share like Petrofac, it's been building a base formation now for nearly 2 years, and it's coming back up towards the upper side of that base formation. And it's really trading at a fraction of its peak values from back in 2011 and 12. But what this also helps to highlight is that back in the last commodity bull market, it was about demand. There was a big jump in demand for oil and other commodities because of China coming into the WTO, and that created a supply response. So there was a lot of investment in new supply. That's where the shale boom came from, and it's a rising cost of marginal production has generally contributed to big commodity bull markets. But the underperformance of the drillers and also the exploring sector and the mining sector is indicative of the lack of not so much about a big jump in demand, but in fact it's in the reluctance to invest in supply. So it's inevitable there will be a supply response. It's then only a question of how high do prices have to go to create the political imperative to really champion the creation of new supply avenues. It's not like we've suddenly run out of oil in the ocean. It's that it's simply too expensive to produce it. So when we think about Petrobras, well, this is obviously a major oil company, but a lot of their oil is in the pre-salt. So, in domestic terms, the share is right in the region of the highs. And of course, then when we look at it in US dollars, it's only just starting to test the peaks from back in 2019 and is still a long way from where it was back in 2008. So this is also, I think, representative of the fact that a lot of offshore oil just is not being developed any longer because there's the risk that companies will be held responsible for pollution, or that they'll never get to do the investments because they'll be held up in court cases indefinitely, and it'll just won't make it a viable business opportunity any longer. So this kind of supply response has to happen. It's just we're just not there yet. And then on top of all of that, There was a lot of worries back in 2019 about the global economy slowing down. And there were deflationary fears. And there was a lot of concern about the IMO 2020 ship emission regulations. And then that was the dog that didn't bark because we had the pandemic in 2020 and there was a massive dislocation in shipping. And now we're starting to see what that means because all of those ships are now starting to burn fuels that come out higher up on the fracking column. So bunker fuel tends to be the lowest possible quality and right around the same level as bitumen, or just slightly above it in fracking. And cracking the barrel, so the crack spread. So now we're starting to see the 55,000 haulage ships around the world, everything from the very large tankers to the dry bulk shippers to the container ships, have their demand, which is about 3 million barrels a day of oil equivalent, has now moved up into the middle distillates. So, understandably, there's a shortage of there's a clear shortage of these middle distillate fuels. So, jetliner fuel exploded on the upside earlier on this year, and it's been exceptionally volatile since. It's coming down today, but is it going to come all the way back down into the underlying base formation? That's a very much an open question. Then we see that diesel prices are ramping higher in Europe because Europe imports 70% of its diesel from Russia. So this is also an additional problem. So when we think about the inflationary problems that are arising from this exceptionally high price of fuel, and then you have the very real prospect that the shortages of heating oil, diesel, and oil are going to create demand for natural gas. Now, historically, we've had spikes in natural gas that have been associated with weather events. And the evolution of shale drilling, well, that created an environment where what happened with the weather didn't really matter anymore. So we've had spikes, but nothing even remotely close to the kinds of spikes we had around Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita. But that was when natural gas production was heavily influenced by what happens in the Gulf of Mexico, whereas all of the new supply has been onshore. So natural gas prices have been contained for the last 12 years, whereas now we're seeing more of a demand response. And the previous speaks were about supply problems, and demand itself was relatively predictable. So natural gas is closing today above $8, and this is the first time it's been above $8 since 2008. So we're definitely getting inflationary pressures starting to come through. And it's, I think, worth considering too that a lot of electricity is produced with natural gas. So even though consumers, they see natural gas usage going up in the winter because of heating, well, then they don't generally tend to think they're using natural gas in the summer because electricity spikes with air conditioning use. But of course, a lot of that electricity comes from natural gas. So we're going to have upward pressure on electricity rates, and that's an additional draw on the ability of consumers to fund themselves on a month-to-month basis. Now, when we think about financial conditions, there's, I think, an easy way to monitor them, and that's with Bitcoin. And Bitcoin pulling back points to tighter financial conditions. So it pushed back above the $30,000 level yesterday and then wasn't able to hold it. So it's coming back down today. Now, this is a potential area of support, and there have been plenty of times over the last 15 months when Bitcoin has bounced from around this level. So if it can push back above 30 and then hold it, well, there's the possibility that it's a low of at least near term, potentially even medium term significance. But it's also worth highlighting that the next halving isn't going to be for another 2 years. And it's really quite likely that there's going to be a Bitcoin winter between now and then, because the price doesn't really start going up until after the halving. So, and because that is the event that really helps to emphasize the limited supply argument. So we're really touch and go here with, on the one hand, bonds, and then when we look at the Bitcoin price, it's barely holding on here around the 30,000 level. So we're definitely seeing commodity prices jumping on the upside, and wheat is another very clear example of that. It was up its limit in here today. So it's following corn higher, and corn is consolidating in the region of its all-time peak. So we're still seeing a lot of food inflation, energy inflation, and then I think coffee is the commodity that gets people out of bed or perhaps keeps them out of bed in the morning, and it's bouncing from the $2 area and the region of the 200-day moving average. So that's support in the region of the peaks from back in 2014. And this looks like it looks like a chart that has further to go on the upside. The one thing that I think is also particularly relevant is to monitor what's going on in India and the magnitude of its heat wave. So they had temperatures at 49 degrees Celsius. That's 120 Fahrenheit in here today. And it's still another 6 weeks before the monsoon rains arrive. So this is obviously creating a very uncomfortable situation for India. And it's weighing on the stock market. And the Nifty index is back on the region of the lows. It was a little steadier in here today, but it's back below the 200-day moving average. The moving average has started to turn lower. A reversion back down towards the 1,000-day moving average really would not be beyond the bounds of possibility at all. Then the Chinese economy continues to reel from the lockdowns in Shanghai, and they worry about where the next lockdowns are going to appear, because the transmissibility of the Omicron and subsequent variants is so much higher than the original coronavirus strain. So trying to ensure that a COVID zero policy is practical means shutting down the entire country. They've already closed the borders. And for a country that really thrives on international trade, that's a really tall prospect. So it looks increasingly likely that they're going to have to do something to stimulate the economy. But there's still a lot of reluctance to do that, because during a lockdown, there's certainly no way that China, with a population of 1.3 trillion, is going to start handing out checks to people. That's just, there's no way that they're going to do that, even if they are nominally communists. And it suggests that we're going to see additional downward pressure. And of course, that's weighing on the prospects for global growth as well. Now, the US dollar has been especially firm, but it's pausing. But this is still a consistent trend on the upside. And the Federal Reserve does seem to be keen to continue to raise rates and to tighten monetary conditions, tighten financial conditions. And I've been very much of the view that they wouldn't let up until we see a very meaningful pullback on Wall Street. And that's starting to feed through into lots of other markets. So the tight financial conditions in the USA and the strong dollar are continuing to put pressure on Europe because oil is denominated in dollars. So the stock market there is steadying in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but hasn't really followed through on the upside just yet. Now, when we look at oil prices, but in euro, well, then I think it really helps to highlight just what an influence the strength of the dollar has had, or the weakness of the euro has had on the economy. Because we're, instead of being in the region of the peaks from back in 2012 and 13, well, we're well above them. And the price is consolidating around the 100 euro level, and this looks like a first step above the base. So this is a very meaningful event for Europe, and it's likely to weigh on economic activity. We're still very much within this corrective phase overall. We've seen that Lebanon has defaulted on their debt, Sri Lanka is defaulting on their debt. Then there are a number of other countries are I think under stress. Turkey has had a massive devaluation of their currency. Argentina is on the verge of another bailout. South Africa is having trouble with Eskom and their electricity utility, and the inflation is running and it is another place where inflation is problematic. And this is all symptomatic of tightening financial conditions. And we're seeing these kinds of effects now, even though the Federal Reserve has only raised rates by 75 basis points. They haven't even begun to reduce the size of their balance sheet yet. And demand really hasn't changed that much. So they may yet continue onwards, and that's pointing to significantly slower economic growth. That's generally positive for bonds, but it's also positive for gold. And gold prices are rebounding in here today from around the $1,800 level. So this was a potential area of support. I'll be a lot happier when it's above the 200-day moving average in the $1,850 area. But generally, gold tends to be a volatile instrument. And with so much uncertainty, then the outlook for gold to do well is very much supported by the fact that if we do see slowing economic growth, particularly on a global basis, then that inhibits the ability of central banks to raise rates, and that creates a negative real interest rate environment, and that's positive for gold. So I think it's having pulled back from 2075 to 1800, it's a sufficiently large pullback to start to encourage value investors to come back in. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.